Chihuahua.
Venga,
venga.
Vayechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim shiva esrei shana. Vayechi yimei Yaakov shnei chayav sheva shanim ve'arba'im umas shana. Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt 17 years, and the days of Yaakov, the years of his life, were 147 years.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Ah, you're here. Good. Take the easy chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your editor, Phil Chernofsky. You know what? I think I'll go back to saying I'm your host. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayechi, the 12th and final sedra of the book of Bereshit. It's been a tough book, and we'll talk some about that in addition to about Vayechi. But first, let me tell you that recording and first broadcast is Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 14th day of Tevet, 5773, corresponding to December 27th in the soon-to-end year 2012. And what else can I tell you? It's 3:20 in the afternoon, Israel time. And we will recite Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir Hama'alot, Mima Amakim Kraticha Adonai. Adonai Shima Vekoli, Tehiena Aznecha Kashuvot Lekol Tachanunai. Imavonot Tishmorya Adonai Miya Amod, Ki Imacha Hasilicha Lama'an Tivare. Kiviti Adonai Kivita Nafshi Velid Varo Hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai, mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael, mi kol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha-omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha-makom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem, mi tzara lirvacha u'meafela l'ora, ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה ובזמן קריב, ונאמר אמן. Little technical stuff before we get to the meat of the show. We've been having on-off problems with our website, www.ttidbits.com. You should also know that the OU has a page or a set of pages for Torah Tidbits. That is not really kept up to date properly. The one that I handle myself is the one I just said, ttidbits.com. There you will find, if everything goes well, the whole file, which is a PDF of the entire this week 64-page file with everything, with ads, with local announcements, with Tiulim, everything the way it looks in the hard copy of Torah Tidbits. Then there's a light version, which is the same, but in a much lower resolution, making it easier to bring up on the screen, not as suitable graphics-wise for printing on paper, but good for reading on the screen. Then there's an extra light version, which is the full file stripped down. I think it went from 64 pages down to 30. Of content only. A separate file available on that website It gives you just the Tiu Lin. Another one gives you the schedule. Another one, you could get just the Parsha Picks, which is part of the whole file as well, and a separate file with Parsha Picks explanations, which we very often don't have enough room to include in the main hard copy due to constraints of the number of pages that we print. I added something last week and this week, and that is whenever any submissions or Divrei Torah or whatever is left out of a regular Torah Tidbits, could be because of lack of space, that's the usual, could be because of forgetfulness or something fell between the cracks, or we got it too early or I couldn't find it when I was up to doing it or whatever. And I remember, so we put together a supplementary page, which is only available from that website. There's a link that you can click and download, which in essence is a supplement for the hard copy of Torah Tidbits, but it's also a supplement for the whole file on the web page as well. This week we had a lovely analysis of some points in the Sedra by Rabbi Shmuel Golden, and we got it late and we just didn't have time to, didn't have space rather, to put it into the regular Torah Tidbits, so at least it's available on the supplement, and the more people who know about it, the more people will be able to read it, and the less tragic it will be to have left it out, although it really deserves to be in. Okay, that's about it. One note on Torah Tidbits audio is that it's available if things go well. I'll tell you briefly what I do. I record the show, usually in my office, in 2 23-minute halves. For a broadcast on the internet, there shouldn't be a time constraint, but Arutz Sheva builds this show, as well as many others, into a radio stream available on the internet, and that comes with news, and it comes with commercial break, and it comes whatever, and it's very strict on the 23-minute per half, so I do 2 23-minute halves, and the OU pieces them together into a 46-minute archive of Torah Tidbits audio, available as a podcast, available online, whatever. And in addition to the OU, and OU Radio, that is, .org, and Arutz Sheva, which is IsraelNationalRadio.com, or IsraelNationalNews.com, I think both of those will get for you. In addition, it's also available on our website, www.ttidbits.com. It gets up first, one place or the other, depending on whether I'm having trouble with the FTP server, if that's the right term, or the OU is running a different schedule and Arutz Sheva didn't get it, or whatever. So you got to look around for it if you're interested in listening to it, but it should be in all of those places. I also have old information, don't know if they're still doing it, but there's a Jewish radio station in Montreal called Radio Shalom, which broadcasts Torah Tidbits audio on Friday. And that goes over on regular radio, as this show started way back when. We're running about 15 years for Torah Tidbits audio, and in the beginning it was not on the internet, it was only on Arutz Sheva Radio. And then it was both on the radio and archived on the internet. And then when the government saw fit, a left-wing government I think it was, to remove Arutz Sheva from the airwaves, it became exclusively internet. There was a chunk of a number of years where I was actually going to Beit El studio and doing the show live, in which case we sometimes had call-ins, and mostly it's been pre-recorded. You are not listening to this as I am speaking these words. We're approaching 3:30 in the afternoon on Thursday, just to let you know. Today was a brilliantly sunny and cool day in Yerushalayim, and nice light jacket, and you're all set. We've had rain nicely in December, and hopefully more to come, but today, not here anyway in Yerushalayim, just a very nice, sunny, wintry day. And now I think we're finally ready. Yes, I wanted to make one comment about the opening piece from the show. Regular listeners know this already. For the last, I don't know, well over a year, I would say, I've been starting the show with a little TV tune. There's a website called televisiontunes.com, which has something like 28,000 different audio clips, MP3s. You could put them as ringtones on your cell phones. And I try to find something that matches with the Sedra. I often do, and sometimes just put something on for fun. Some of them are obscure, some of them are well known, some of them people probably snap their fingers and say, I know that. And I have sort of made it into a competition, but I'll tell you, I'm leaning in a different direction now, and that is to tell you about it, having given you these minutes until now to figure it out. Today's, for example, started with the opening part of the song from The Lion King. I chose The Lion King because of Yehuda, one of Yaakov's sons, who was destined to be the progenitor of the royal line, and his symbol, his emblem, is a lion. So Lion King is very appropriate. In addition, the opening number in The Lion King is called The Circle of Life, and that fits very nicely with Vayechi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim Shvasrei Shana. Yaakov lived in Egypt 17 years. He had reached the age of 147, and the end of the Sedra tells us of his death. And there's your cycle of life, and then Yosef's death, but the fact that Yosef lived long enough to see his children, his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren, and perhaps one other generation, and you have a sense of the circle of life in the Sedra as well, and I thought that was a particularly good choice. My choice for the second half you haven't heard yet, and I would say it's much less straightforward than The Lion King, and maybe I won't explain that one and let Mark and anyone else who wants to write to me about it tell me if they guessed it. Last week, for example, when we had the second half, began with the theme from Wagon Train because of the emphasis in the Torah of Yosef sending specifically covered wagons or wagons to bring Yaakov and the family down to Egypt, and that was very significant to Yaakov, and therefore we began the second half with Wagon Train. The first half, I think, was from an obscure show from way back called Brothers or The Brothers or Me and My Brothers and Me and My Brother, whatever. And that, of course, was appropriate, too, for Vayigash with Yosef and Yehuda and their encounter, etc., etc., and Binyamin and Yosef and all the brothers and Yosef. So Me and My Brother fit very well for that. So whether or not you could recognize it, or whether or not you have Shazam or any other software that can help you recognize these things, it still gives a sense of an introductory clip that speaks to the Sedra. With all that said, let's get into the Sedra. I have an observation which I have not checked if it exists already. I really should look at least in the Bala Turim to see if he says anything about it. But I find it quite interesting. And that is the fact that the Torah makes a point of saying it was 17 years after Yaakov came down to Egypt, which was recorded in last week's Seder of Vayigash. 17 years. He came down at age 130. We know that because when he met Paro, Paro asked him how old he was, and he said 130. So the simple math of 130 plus 17 brings us to his current age at the time of his death, of 147 years. What I find significant about the 17 years is it's matched with the 17 years previously, the first 17 years of Yosef's life. And Yosef was, whether it was a good thing or not, Yaakov's favorite, demonstratively so. And he was 17 when he was abruptly ripped from his father and sold onto the caravan, eventually ending up in Egypt. So Yaakov's life contains two significant 17-year periods. We'll say that when Rachel, Yaakov's beloved, finally gave birth, was when Yaakov really started to live in a certain sense. 17 years, and then that was cut off with the disappearance of Yosef. And then, after the long period of separation, to have another 17 years. 17, by the way, is the numeric value of the word tov, good. So you could throw that into a Dvar Torah if you're inclined to do so. But what struck me just recently is the fact that the opening word of this Sedra, Vayechi, which means, and Yaakov lived, meaning not just was alive, but he really lived. Vayechi, numeric value, Vav is 6, Yud is 10, Chet is 8, Yud is 10, add them up and you get 34. Which covers or equals the two 17-year periods that were life for Yaakov because they were spent with his son Yosef. So I wanted to start with that. It is also interesting to note that after Yosef maneuvered things before he revealed himself to his brothers and then brought the whole family down, he did not go back to Canaan with them. He did not change what he had been doing. He had been elevated to a position of high responsibility in the Egyptian hierarchy, and he continued functioning in that position after settling his family, his father and his brothers and their families, in the area of Goshen. And apparently, business continued as usual. If you remember, Yaakov and family came down after 2 years of the prophesied 7 years of famine. Yosef, in arguing in favor of the family coming down to Egypt, said there are 5 more years to go of this famine, and it's going to be much harder to survive it in Canaan than it would be in Egypt, where they had prepared for it because of these prophecies. So that's the way it reads in the Torah. We have a tradition that with Yaakov and family coming down to Mitzrayim, there was sort of no need to continue the famine, and it ceased. But Yosef apparently continued as a significant ruler in Egypt, and that's why you have this exchange in the beginning, where he has to find out things from a messenger who came to tell him that Yaakov was sick. Apparently he didn't check on him every day, but he had one of his children, perhaps his wife, there are different opinions, ministering to the ailing and aging Yaakov. And when he was notified that he was sick, and that sickness is sort of touted, if that's the right word, which it probably isn't, by the commentaries as an unusual thing, or maybe a unique thing for his time, or maybe just the start of a new phenomenon, that people deteriorated health-wise towards the end of their lives, and that often led to their deaths. Until then, we have no record of anyone ailing in old age, just coming to an age and dying. And there is a tradition that just as life was breathed into mankind, by breath of God through the nostrils, which is an expression and a figurative description, so too life, the soul, left the body through the nostrils in the form of a sneeze. And there is a history around the world in many, many cultures of acknowledging specifically a sneeze with a blessing for good health. In Aramaic, it's asuta. In Hebrew, livriut. In German, Gesundheit. God bless you is the way it was said in the States, and I'm sure different cultures have different ways of acknowledging, but it's that the sneeze is sort of a potent reminder of the frailty of life. We no longer, I guess some people do, but it is no longer the way of the world that life continues up to a predetermined point or whatever, and then ceases without some kind of downhill process until that happens. There's a whole halachic concept of goses, which is a terminally ill person, a fatally ill person, one who is on his deathbed. But these concepts are first introduced to us in this week's parsha with Yaakov Avinu. Hinei avicha chole. What a novel thing this was. It just, usually people didn't have that situation. Yaakov is the first that we know of. And, as a result, there are different ways to analyze it. And some say it was a blessing to Yaakov. And I would say to all of us, when death is approaching for a patriarch of the family, he has time to put his affairs in order. Obviously, it doesn't always work out like that. Lives are cut short by accidents and acts of God and all different kind of things, foul play, and one does not always have time. But in the, let's call it the natural process, there is an awareness that a person has, and that's where the text of the famous wills in the United States of being of sound mind and body before things deteriorate even further. And halachically, there's a whole thing, but we're not going to get into that now. So that's the way it works, and it's introduced to us via Yaakov Avinu in this parsha. We'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Vayechi. You've been listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Vayechi, unless, of course, you clicked on the second half without having listened to the first half, in which case you really should listen to the first half. Okay, at the beginning of Vayechi, we have the fact Yosef is in Mitzrayim, Yaakov is in Mitzrayim, Yosef, the whole family is there, 17 years, and the next noteworthy event is the death of Yaakov Avinu, our father, our father Jacob. And before he dies, he gathers his children, and he seems to be about to reveal to them what's in store for them, including how long of an enslavement in Egypt there will be, but according to our tradition, he was blocked from that knowledge. He was not able to give over that prophecy to his children. They were not to know, because knowing makes things easier, and it wasn't supposed to be that easy. Something like that. Instead, he blesses them, describing them, and in a very poetic manner, presents his farewell words to his sons. And Vayechi is a relatively short sedra, 85 psukim, and a major chunk are these blessings to the children. Before that, let's go back to the relationship with Yosef. And I would say that this event that is recorded in Parshat Vayechi continues where he left off in that first 17 years of having a special relationship with Yosef, the son, the first son of his beloved Rachel. And it's sort of a tragic kind of description, if you look at it, where he had other loving wives, we'll say, and they bore him children. And it's almost as if Reuven, yeah, Shimon, okay, Levi, yeah, Yehuda, fine, and on, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher, then Yisachar and Zebulun, and finally, he has, Rachel has Yosef, and back in Vayetze, where we're first introduced to the children, that's when Yaakov decides it's time to go back home and start a life of his own and not under the thumb of his father-in-law and Uncle Lavan. So it's Yosef. And then the parsha that told us that Yosef was favored and he got the striped garment, colorful garment, and the jealousy that it created. And here in Vayechi, it really doesn't change, except that the brothers have changed. So you have an episode of Yosef bringing his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, to his ailing father Yaakov for the blessing of Avraham to Yitzchak, to Yaakov, now to Yosef, and to future generations, where he blesses Ephraim and Manasseh. It does not tell us anywhere in the Torah that he blessed Yehuda's children or Levi's children or any of the other brothers. And it sort of closes the door on this chapter without a resolution of how to cope with a situation where one son is favored over the other. I don't know if I'm being fair in what I'm saying. I'm just observing it. Of course, from here, we also have the very famous blessing to the children, Hamalach HaGoel Oti Mikol Ra. I really should play the song. Maybe I will. Yivorech Et HaNe'arim V'Karevahem Shmi V'Shem Avotai Avraham V'Yitzchak V'Yidgu LaRov B'Kerev HaAretz. In English, in the stone Chumash by Art Scroll, may the angel who redeemed me from all evil bless the lads, and may my name be declared upon them in the names of my forefathers, Abraham and Isaac, and may they proliferate abundantly like fish within the land. Hamalach HaGoel Oti, we sing to our children. It's part of Kriyat Shema Al Hamita that everybody says at night. Every night, it's a special. I know my daughters put their children to sleep with Shema, which is also dates back to Yaakov and his sons, and Hamalach HaGoel Oti, and in case of one of them, also Vili Rishalayim Ircha. But that's not the point. The point is that the blessing earlier that Yaakov gave to Yosef via his sons is Yisimcha Elokim Ke'Ephraim V'Chimnasha. May God make you like Ephraim and Manasseh. This is how children, sons specifically, are to be blessed throughout the generations, and we use it. And Hamalach HaGoel Oti, we also use. So these are important model setters that we have here in Vayechi. One comment about this Ephraim and Manasseh. I don't remember the source. I must have read it or heard it someplace way, way back. But this is how I understand it. When you bless a daughter, you say, may God make you like Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. The mothers, the four mothers. Four, who knows four, I know four, four are the mothers of Israel. And that fits. You would expect the male counterpart to that blessing, may God make you like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Doesn't say that. Doesn't say Moshe Rabbeinu. Doesn't say Moshe and Aharon. Doesn't say David and Shlomo. It says Ephraim v'Chimnasha, like Ephraim and Menasha. So the question is, why? Aside from the fact that that's what Yaakov said when he blessed them, this is how children in the future should be blessed, what's the significance of it? And again, I don't remember the source, but this is what I know. Ephraim, Menasha was the oldest. Ephraim got the senior blessing, that of the right hand of Yaakov Avinu. And there was that whole scene where Yosef panicked and was extremely distraught when he saw, after his careful preparation, you know what, let me take a step back and make sure you all know what I'm talking about. Yosef brings the two sons who were born to him in Egypt before Yaakov came down with him to visit the ailing Yaakov, who is ill and close to death. When the hugging and kissing is over, it's time to formally present his own children, Yosef, to his father, their grandfather, and he positions them, and the Torah describes this, he positions them in such a way that when Yaakov puts one hand on Menasha, the oldest, it will be his right hand, because Menasha is the firstborn, and his other hand on Ephraim, his left hand. Instead, the Torah says, Sikel et Yadav, Yaakov crossed his hands and reached over to put his right hand on Ephraim and his left hand on Menasha. This panicked Yosef. It was like deja vu all over again, to quote Yogi Berra, whoever said that. Because Yosef, more than anyone else ever, knew the difficulty in favoring one son over another. And he didn't want to see it happen again. And he certainly didn't want any tragic consequences from it. He tries to change the position of his father's hands, and Yaakov refuses. And Yaakov says, I know what I'm doing, this is what must be. How do we cope with this? It seems that both Ephraim and Menasha handled this exceedingly well. I'm going to put it in the wording that I put into the written Torah tidbits. Again, I don't know where this came from, but this is what I said. There are two challenges to children. Usually it's one or the other. How do you cope? How do you handle a situation where you are in a superior position to your brothers? And how do you handle a situation where you are in an inferior position? A firstborn, just biologically, has a certain superior standing in the family, and he has to be very careful, or she, not to wave it around and intimidate his younger siblings. And a younger child has to know how to handle having older siblings and sometimes not having any younger ones. There is jealousy to avoid a superiority, not to flaunt different challenges, especially in a situation where the Bechor is being passed over for the superior blessing by his younger brother. And that's happened before. In fact, if you look in the book of Bereshit, it's scary. Cain, Hevel. That's where part of the problem started. And Yishmael with Yitzchak, and Yaakov with Esav, or Esav with Yaakov, and certainly Yosef and his brothers, and here we have the next generation, and Ephraim is being favored over Manasseh. The blessing to our children is, whichever role you are in, whether you are in an Ephraim situation or a Manasseh situation, handle it properly. Don't be a schwitzer. Don't be a big shot. Don't gloat. Don't be jealous. That can eat you up. Don't be upset. Don't be angry. Accept your position and thrive with it rather than become bitter. And if Ephraim and Manasseh overcame the potential dangers, then they are the perfect choice for a father to say to his sons, Yisimcha Elokim ke Ephraim v'chimnashe. That's one explanation, that's one understanding, that's what I could tell you. Okay, I found a Shlomi Dax version of Hamalach HaGoel on my computer. I don't remember the name of the album, but it's a beautiful song. It's on the long side. I think I'll let it go all the way. And I would like you to dim the light in your room, close your eyes, lean back, listen to the music, hear the blessing of not just Yaakov through Yosef to Yosef's children, but the blessing that goes from generation to generation to generation of Jews. Once upon a time, I was a son. And then, while being a son, I became a father. And then, while being a father, I became a grandfather. And I have daughters, and they have children, and those children are my grandchildren. And I want to be able, in my mind and in my heart, to filter the best times and the best qualities of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, the Shvatim, and the best of all Jewish generations. We are a part of that chain of tradition. We are each a link. And when you're the last link on a chain, that's one thing, but when you see the next link and the next link after that, and Amir Tzashem, the next one after that, it's a very special kind of thing. So this bracha to Ba Yaakov should be internalized and personalized and be on us and from us to our children and grandchildren. Shlomi Dax.
Hamalach HaGoyel,
One additional comment I want to make about the very end of that blessing, Bekerev Haaretz. Bekerev Haaretz, within the land. I don't think it's a stretch to say that brachot of the Torah and the brachot which we want for our children include that they should be enjoyed and benefited from specifically in the land of Israel. You look in the Torah and you find many, many blessings and you say, wait a minute, this blessing is not for Jews anywhere they are. This is for the Jewish people in the land of Israel. Obviously, I'm speaking from a subjective point of view, but I have always wanted all my fellow Jews to come here. There's plenty of room and plenty of things to do and plenty of challenges. And here is where we want the blessings to come. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtamea.